Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Kemba Walker. Step back.
Hello and welcome into another episode of Full Court Press alongside Nick Merrick. I'm Josh Franz. On today's show, we'll get to a little playoff preview for the NBA. Nick Merrick will finally get his FaceTime. But let's get started with last night's national title game in college basketball. Nick, somebody caught your eye early and often in last night's game. Who was it and what'd he do?
Well, it was the reason why Luke Hancock won the most outstanding player of the Final Four and of that national championship game. To close out the first half, the team was down by 11 points with 3 minutes and 33 seconds left, and Luke Hancock single-handedly put the team on a 14-0 run. Made two free throws and then went 4-for-4 for 3 points. He finished 5-for-6 behind the arc. So it's the first time ever that a reserve player has won the most outstanding player of the Final Four in March Madness history. So the fact that that's even, the highlight story or one of them, besides obviously Kevin Ware and Rick Pitino winning his second with two teams. There's a couple of big headlines after that one, but also the Louisville women have a chance to win the women's title tonight against Connecticut. Probably won't happen, but if they do, it'll be the first time since Connecticut that both the men and women won in the same year back in 2004.
Right.
So, I mean, there was a bunch. It was a good story for basketball. I mean, Louisville won. They were the best team coming in, and it was one of the few times that the best team coming in rode it out and won all six games. I had to find it there before I goofed up. Not seven, because they didn't have the play-in game, obviously.
One
but
day.
It's just a good story. I mean, it seems like Louisville pulls story after story after story out of nowhere, pretty much. And I'll have one on my FaceTime as well later. But it was a quality game. It was one of the better ones. I mean, for a championship game, it was neck and neck, like pretty much the entire way. Obviously, both teams had their spurts where they got ahead at times. I mean, Michigan was up by as much, I think, as 12 in the first half, and then it was pretty much good quality basketball in the second, where fans were glued to the TV. There was never a dull moment. And then eventually it was a Luke Hancock three-pointer again in that second, the only one he made in the second half that put the team up by 10. And that didn't solidify the victory, obviously, but with 3 minutes left, it put desperation mode on Michigan, and that basically made it impossible for them to climb back. So good championship. Congratulations to Louisville on winning it. Our brackets didn't fare too well either. 57 percentile for me. But
I'm not even going to mention how bad my bracket was. But having a reserve player win the national title player of the game just symbolizes how good this Louisville team is. The depth that they had. There have been good teams in the past, but the ability for somebody to come off the bench and be the best player on the court really stands out for me, because they didn't have all their guys. Obviously, Kevin Ware was banged up. He couldn't go. Russ Smith, Peyton Silva, and the guy you mentioned just all combine for their three guards that stand out and just single-handedly win them a national title game. Their big guys didn't really show up. They were good on the boards, but Jang didn't really have a great offensive day. And it was really the guards for Louisville and the depth of that position, which people thought was a weakness, that won them the national title.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can see it that way in the fact that obviously the depth is very, very crucial, because against the Wichita State game earlier, when they played in the Final Four, if you look at the stats, the bench almost had more points than the starters, because the bench ended up shooting 12 for 16.
Well, when a team is deep, we've seen this before. When a team is deep and it's second unit against second unit, that's when they take off.
Because right.
Most first units are pretty evenly matched. So when you see the second units get in the game, that's when they're able to separate themselves.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they did. That's why Hancock helped getting the most outstanding player. I mean, he had 20 points against Wichita State, went 3-for-5 for three, and then obviously last night in the championship game, He ended up going 5 for 6 behind the arc and ended with 22 points of his own. So 42 points in two games for a reserve player is phenomenal. But, I mean, another thing, too, is the fact that they have players, but Louisville's starters aren't, like, single-handed weapons. It's not like...
They're not
as
they're
much
not
as they want to. Yeah, they wanted to just give Peyton Siva the ball. Beginning of the season, they're saying, all right, Siva's our go-to guy. Let's see if he can. He's not an isolation guy. You can't just put him aside and have him.
He's phenomenal in transition, but he can't take over a game in the half court. And Michigan was able to keep him in the half court for the most part. Late in the second half, they give up offensive rebounds that let Louisville take over, and they turn the ball over a little too much, and that's really what cost them the game.
Well, it's kind of ironic I said that, too. I mean, I should follow that up by saying he did have 18 points and went perfect on the free throw line. It's not like he's not a fantastic player. I mean, they aren't superstar potential on a college team.
No, I don't think Peyton Siva would be an all-star in the NBA unless he is in transition all of the time.
Right.
He reminds me of Dwayne Wade, but he obviously doesn't have the half-court isolation moves. He doesn't have the half-court isolation moves that Dwayne Wade has. He can't break his guy down and get to the basket or kick it out to a guy for three like Trey Burke can. He just doesn't have that ability yet, and who knows if he will ever get it.
Well, what's funny is I remember people calling him Peyton Silva his first year back in Louisville, but now, there's a guy, too, who was getting off track a little bit, but he was now in his senior year, got the title he always wanted. Obviously, it took him a little while longer than he wanted to, but he was a top talent out of high school, and this is a typical story where a guy waits 4 years, gets title, then goes to NBA, and he's certainly going to be a draft pick. The mocks now are starting to flock out. It's so hard to keep updated with all the different places where he's going to go, but he'll be a guy who'll drop in the late first, early second round.
I could see him going just outside the lottery.
Yeah. I think he can drop as low as a second round pick, though. It depends on what the team's needs are at that point. If they have to go big, obviously, a guy like Steve is not going to help with that. But, another story, too, is let's focus on Rick Pitino a little bit. The fact that he's the first ever coach to win his second title with two schools. He won it back in Kentucky in 94. Also, he was elected into the 2013 class of the Naismith Hall of Fame.
And it's a good part, day.
And he's a part owner of a horse that's going to the Kentucky Derby. So he had a fantastic week. I don't know if it can get much better for a college coach at one point. But just to mention a couple names he's joining with. Him and seven others, so eight total. But the only other two gigantic names people might be aware of, at least that kind of headline it besides Pitino, are obviously Gary Payton. Just for me, I feel like she's a well-known name in the women's college basketball and Sylvia Hatchell and UNC's coach. She's been there. She won over 700 wins, so she's well on her way, too, to finishing up her career strong. But
let's talk about Gary Payton for a second. Growing up, he was one of my favorite players of all time. I remember the early video games for Nintendo 64 where he was on the Sonics. And it was like the easiest thing to do in the game was to play with Gary Payton and steal the ball. He such quick hands, such quick feet, and he knew what to do defensively. And I went on NBA.com this morning, and they had a poll question, who is the best defensive player of all time? And Gary Payton was dominating that poll.
Really?
John Stockton was on the list. I don't remember who else was there. But John Stockton was second with like 1,000 votes, and Gary Payton had more than double that, and just blew everybody away.
Well, he's a great player. That's why he's a Hall of Fame guy. Yeah, it's pretty easy. When all I do is push the A button, and then automatic, right?
Well, for Nintendo 64,
what was it back then?
I think
it was
A button.
No, A was probably pass.
Let's see. I think it was B.
I think you hold down B, and he was shot. If
or
you
one,
pressed
of,
it,
one of the yellow things. I don't know. It's a long time ago.
Man, that was back when we were kids. That's now we're going back to ages.
All right.
So the Final Four, obviously phenomenal. Great game to watch. The tournament itself was crazy, just like we expected it. So the fact that both of our brackets didn't pan out, I was so pumped just to have one Final Four pick in Syracuse, which is going to give me my FaceTime. But I guess before we switch gears too, I'll throw it out there. The one little FaceTime I wanted to throw out was the fact that how college coaches don't really get as much respect sometimes as NBA coaches or professional coaches, quote unquote. So two of the stories I really enjoyed from this past week of tournament games, the fact that going back to the Final Four, Syracuse lost to Michigan. That put Michigan into the title game. And one reporter who follows Syracuse on a daily basis asked Jim Boeheim, are you going to return for another year? And Boeheim looked at him and kind of was like, what are you talking about? Like, where did that question even come from? That was kind of out of left field. Like, did I ever mention he didn't answer the question, but he's pretty much thinking in his head, did I ever mention or refer to the fact that this might be my last season at Syracuse? So he was snotty. I mean, typical Jim Boeheim, he gets frustrated with reporters. So he's kind of just like, well, why do I have to answer that question? Are you going to go ask Rick Pitino that question? Are you going to go ask Boeheim that question? I mean, it was just phenomenal to see that whole escapade kind of erupt in typical Boeheim. I mean, you know, good for him. Like, situation, come on, my team just lost. I understand as a reporter and ourselves as reporters, you have to ask the tough questions. Little bit out of line there. Come on, the guy just did a miraculous run, took the team to the Final Four, tried to go back and win it since the Carmelo Anthony days. So that's one thing. But then the second one is now the media is going to get on Rick Pitino's case for as good of a week as he's having about whether or not he's going to get a tattoo when he promised his team about right around the Big East tournament that he was going to get a tattoo if Louisville won the national title. So now people are voicing their opinions on Twitter. Some pretty funny ones. He followed up in the post-game conference after winning it. The team was laughing behind him. He goes, yeah, I'm going to get a tattoo. So we'll see if he follows through with that. But that's just a funny story, too, is, you know, people don't find these stories as much. For as good as a coach as Rick Pitino is, it's kind of funny that he threw the tattoo thing. I'd say he's going to go through with it. It may be a really small one, but whatever. I think he's still going to get a tattoo. He made the promise to the team. After everything that's happened, all they've been through, they're really close. I think he's going to follow through. But, I mean, the fact that college coaching was finally, you know, it always has ups and downs, but I just don't like the fact that it tends to give negative publicity. And this time, even with Rick Pitino, it was almost like it was a fun question, but they almost tried to take an attack. Like, hey, are you going to go through this? Like, he just won a national title. Like, give him a break. It's funny, but I hope nobody gets on his case over it.
Is that the end of your FaceTime right there?
Yes.
Okay. The first thing I want to disagree with is that college coaches are not stars in college basketball. They're absolutely the stars of college basketball. They're the only ones who were there the entire time.
Yes, but do they think they get as much respect sometimes as NBA coaches?
They wouldn't get the respect if they weren't the stars. I mean, you look at Coach K, Roy Williams, Dean Smith, John Wooden. There are more coaches in college basketball, and all the guys you named are legendary coaches for the most part in college basketball. And if they win championships, multiple, they're legends. If Eric Spoelstra wins another title with the Heat this year, is he a legend? I don't think so. Because the players in the NBA are the stars and not the coaches.
Okay, well then what about head coach Wichita State and Greg Williams? Do you think he's going to be...
If you win multiple titles in college basketball, you're a legendary coach. If you win multiple titles in the NBA, you might not be. And
right,
that's what I'm saying.
But the whole point, I mean, obviously... Yeah, if you're going to be a Hall of Fame coach like the ones you just named off, I mean, those who aren't Hall of Fame are soon going to be. But there's a difference between being great or getting respect. And I don't know if Williams really had respect in Wichita State just because people are like, it was easy bracket. I mean, I even fell into this too. Easy bracket, the team ran, you know, it was 1 year, whatever.
Fine. Let's see. Shaka Smart had one Final Four run in his career, and he's regarded as one of the best coaches in college basketball.
He's still respected, but it was because the first year he came on VCU, then every single year since then, he's always been in the tournament and been a top five seed.
So that means if you're a top five seed, you're a top 20 team in college?
Yes.
Right? Okay. So if you look at the NBA, and first of all, if you're a top 20 team, you're not really anything. So let's say you're a five seed in the playoffs, and you make the semifinals, or you make the Eastern Conference Finals 1 year, and then you're never back, you're not going to be respected and remembered as a coach.
Yeah, if you go to the semifinal, but if you can...
That's what the Final Four is.
But if you consistently go to the semifinals...
Shaka Smart hasn't, but he's respected as a coach greatly.
Yeah, because they want to give him a chance to run. I mean, he's...
We'll see if he ever gets back.
They think he's locked up in VCU. I think he will. I think he's going to stay in VCU for probably another 4 or 5 years.
Oh, without a doubt, I think so too, even longer.
Yeah.
But he's respected greatly as a head coach right now for one great year, and we don't know if he's going to produce another great year. The school hasn't had a history of great college basketball.
Right.
And that's the reason. It's
right.
not
so
because...
put him on the map. It put him on the map. Right. But also, I mean, he may be respected just because of he doesn't want to leave. You know, it's a coach that's like, oh my gosh, it's a coach that goes to a small market, builds it up, and now they respect him because, hey, he had a UCLA job on the table and he turned it down.
Right.
Or he had a bigger program So maybe that factors in too. I mean, it's just different. I don't know. I just feel like I hear so much about, well, NBA itself, I hear a lot about the players. I don't think coaching gets as much credit in the NBA particularly for a basketball podcast. But in other sports, such as hockey or baseball or I don't even know. I could say like rowing, but there's no, I don't know if I've seen coaches in rowing. But
I mean, think I feel like baseball is so much different because there are basically just during game managerial decisions. Who to pitch, who to pinch hit, when to bunt, when to hit and run.
Yeah, the rest goes there on themselves.
There aren't strategical teaching moments in baseball that you would have in basketball. Like for Louisville, when you trap, have another guy go forward. Like there's not the teamwork aspect, there's not the
I mean, I don't want to get in a,
I don't know.
See, I wouldn't want to get in a battle either. I mean, I brought it up just to kind of spark something, but the fact like in the NBA too, with like even with Greg Popovich, you look at him, is he a fantastic coach? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is he a Hall of Famer? Absolutely. Yeah. Has he done what he like, did he build that team as something better? Yes. But then at the same time, if you had Joe Schmo off the street and he had in years past, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, and Tim Duncan, could that Joe Schmo become something? Yes, because the players are there. You know what I mean?
Possibly. They might not have been the consistent champions.
They won't be as big of a name as Popovich. Yeah, I agree with that. Like, they won't. Popovich helped that crew reach their potential.
And Popovich is also the recruiter.
Yes.
So he's the general manager.
Well, he knows how to scout.
So Ginobili's a late second round pick. They get him. Parker was, I don't even remember where Parker went, but he's foreign and they got
somewhere.
Him.
Yeah.
So.
No, I know. I agree. I mean, part of it's then recruiting and going abroad and figuring out who's going to help your team. But the whole point I wanted to bring back was the fact that in the college basketball, these guys have to recruit the high school talent themselves.
Right.
They bring them in. They try to bring programs. Because, okay, in college basketball, there's, what, 260 teams maybe?
Right. There's a lot more work to do in college.
Right. So high school kids have 260 options of D1 only. I mean, some kids go D2, D3, community college, whatever, then transfer. Then the NBA, you have 30 picks.
Right, and the kids have no say over it.
Right, and they're pretty much, they're going to go, and they have to accept it. If they want to decline the money, I mean, I guess they could.
They could Ricky Rubio it and wait a year and go back to Europe.
But. Exactly, but I mean, that's the whole point I wanted to say. Like, when coaches get a big team, Andy Einfeld, a perfect example of it, going over to USC now after one big year with Florida Gulf Coast, people saw him on the map now because he didn't have talent. Those guys aren't going to go to the NBA. Maybe one, if they're lucky, is like a late, just because like, oh, well, might as well give them a shot because they have that winning mentality now. But that's a coach that exactly didn't, you know, honestly didn't really get, the fact that he goes to USC means he didn't get respect, in my opinion, but there's not many coaching options open, at least going to Pac-12.
Listen to what he had. He had one good year in which they won two tournament games.
Yes.
So they left after, they lost in the Sweet 16. So they were one of the top 16 teams in the country one time. And he got a job elevated to six or seven figures on his contract.
No, I agree. Oh,
that's a huge jump.
It was a seven figure. I think they're giving him over $1 million a year. Yeah,
there
it is a huge jump.
Yeah.
And it's for two lucky games. And,
they played phenomenally.
They did, but you know what I mean.
No, I understand.
He played really – they could have – they made it to the tournament because they won the championship. For all they know, they could have not won a single game in the regular season and then just gotten hot for 2 weeks and won – what, probably seven games in a row, five in a row to win their conference tournament, and then the two games of March Madness.
Yeah. And you give somebody millions of dollars for two great games.
But I'm still going to keep an eye out. I mean, same situation over with Brad Stevens and Butler.
Well, he went to the Final Four 2 years in a row.
He did.
Lost by one to Duke in the championship. But he has a better resume.
He has a better resume, but he's also respected for the same thing as Shaka Smart for staying in Butler.
Right.
At the same point, even though people don't like him.
He got back instantly to the Final Four. Shaka didn't.
Yes. Well, even though the fact that people don't like Steven sometimes for staying in Butler, they're like, oh, man, I wish he would go to my school.
Right. Well, people can feel the same way about any coach. Like, I wish I could have gotten that guy.
Right.
Same thing about recruits.
Hey, come to ASU. We'll take him. I don't like Herb Sendek. So.
Oh!
By all means, come over to ASU in Tempe. All right, but kind of interesting. I don't know. It's just like the way I guess the overarching thing is sometimes I feel the way media handles things is really – interesting or it's, you know, they have, obviously we have a tough job to do, sometimes going a little too far. And I think the Boeheim thing went a little too far. And then things like the Rick Pitino thing, I think it's a little fun as long as people don't take it out of proportion and blow it up and try to think like, oh, now he's a bad coach because he didn't follow through with his word. If somebody starts chirping that in about a week, then I'm going to start getting frustrated.
Right. I think the Boeheim thing is so overblown partially. I mean, it's he didn't have to make a big deal about it. Like, if you ask me, Josh, are you coming back to full court press next year? And I'd be like, wait, I never mentioned I wasn't. No, just say, yeah, I plan on it. That's what I'm going to do. If Boeheim just said, yes, I'm coming back to Syracuse, it wouldn't even be a big deal. The conversation would be over. There would be another question.
Right.
Because
well,
he decided to take it personally,
it. Yeah.
That would that's what started it.
Right. Now, because now people are thinking, like, well, that's an interesting answer.
Right.
No, I understand.
If he just answered the question, it would have been over. And he knew the answer. He just answered it wrong and caused controversy.
Yeah, he did. But it was part of both. Then they started fighting. That was kind of funny when the reporter and him were fighting. It's like, no, you're wrong. You get your facts straight. Like, I have my facts straight. Are you coming back? And it's like, whoa, yikes. It's so like a little bit of chirping. All right, we'll end it with March Madness.
Yeah, let's
talk.
Let's,
congrats on Louisville.
Let's let you do your ballers and fallers so I can do my ballers and fallers so we can start talking about the NBA again.
All right, I'll do mine really quick then. So, baller. Okay, obviously Hancock. Let's go with him. Whatever, Trey Burke, the other one as well. And this one's pretty, it falls in your lap. You can't deny who the ballers were. Trey Burke as well, even though they lost, he still put up 24 points. He won the John Wooden Player of the Year, so you have to give him credit on full court press for that. Fallers, I have two of them. The main one, if I'm going to go with the player, it's going to be Michael Carter-Williams. I think I've given him a baller, a record, three times now. But he's a faller now just because the team's finally in the spotlight. He got the team the potential I thought they could be. 2 points, 5 turnovers, 2 assists was his stat line in 35 minutes against Michigan.
Wow.
When they eventually lost by 5 points. So, sorry, Mike Carter-Williams. You're going to be a great pro. Congratulations on making the Final Four, but you're one of my fallers. The other one, I don't want to go too far on this one, but just for kicks, it's going to be Wichita State and the fact that they had 7 turnovers in a 6-minute span to end the game. They realized that they were the Shockers and not the Cardinals. Pretty much straight and simple. Otherwise, that game wasn't locked. The fact they had all those runs. And then, Louisville played great and they created turnovers, but they're the ones who created the turnovers. I don't know. Just a little bit of baller or faller performance there as well from the Shockers. But nobody was expecting them to go to the finals either. So that put an asterisk next to that Fallers because really it's a fantastic story that they made it to the Final Four.
Right, they had a great year. Let me just comment on one of your ballers, and that's Trey Burke. I was watching the game last night, pulling for Michigan. I've got a cousin next year who's going to be a freshman starting in the fall at Michigan. So, hey, I'll pull for the school my cousin's going for. Anyway, I
think he'll play some minutes or going to be part of the Michigan.
I think he'll be part of that the
bench
fan crowd.
Fan
that
crowd, the final 2 minutes, we're up by 20, put him in. Hey, say you're on the team, say you're on a D1 team in a big program.
So I'm sitting last night watching the game, looking at the TV, rooting for Michigan, and Trey Burke is going off. He's having a phenomenal game. He's making his 30-footers. He's attacking the basket well. I start yelling at the TV. The only way for Michigan to win this game is for Trey Burke to take every shot. And he's kept passing the ball, and Michigan stopped scoring, and then they lost.
Oh, he can't. I mean, college basketball isn't an individual effort by any means. You can't just be like, hey, give me the ball. I'm going to do it myself.
He's the point guard. He's bringing the ball.
No,
the
I know.
Just
but
don't
you,
pass the ball.
But you can't turn on just like, you can't pull on your LeBron James shoes and just be like, give me the rock. I got this. Because then all of a sudden, then Louisville is going to adjust just like that. And all of a sudden,
and then
crap,
Trey
Burks doesn't work.
Is a phenomenal distributor. So if they focus on him, that's when other guys open up.
Right, but then if the rest of the team is cold. I mean, the rest of the team is cold when he wasn't shooting.
Exactly. But, what do you have to lose at that point?
I guess. You don't want to look unselfish.
No, I understand. you mean he doesn't want to look selfish.
Yes, anyway. He wants to look unselfish.
Right, exactly. So I'll get to my ballers and fallers. We know LeBron and Wade have sat out a game or two the past couple weeks. And they've been resting, maybe hurt a little bit, getting ready for the playoffs. Anyway, Mike Miller has stepped in and played extremely well for the Heat. In his last few games, he's averaging 30 minutes a game, which I never thought he would do again in his career because he's old with a bad back and his knees aren't great. But he's averaging 16 points a game on 4 threes a game. He's getting six rebounds and 4 assists also. He's filling up a stat line more than most of his career. And he's just had a good week.
All right, so good baller,
so,
faller.
Yeah, I'm impressed with Mike Miller.
I think a faller's an all-star, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, the faller's most definitely an all-star. He's coming back from injury, so maybe it's going to take him a little longer to get back into it. But Kyrie Irving hasn't played well. His last 3 games in his last week, he's averaged 12 points and 3 rebounds. And Kyrie Irving isn't a great rebounder, we know that, but he's normally better than that, and his 12 points are, I think, probably a season low for a week-long stretch for him. I mean,
yeah,
he's a
like, eh.
he's an 18 to 22 point scorer to go with his 8 assists, not a 12 point scorer. And I mean, Cleveland's obviously not going anywhere now, and looking forward to the lottery to see who can join him. But he just hasn't played well the tail end of the season.
If they have the first pick of the draft, they already have Irving. I think they were looking over at I think Noel on ESPN mocks went number one. I could see a two guard like Marcus Smart, even though that's who's going one and two. I could see.
Oh, if they have the number one pick, I think they go Macklemore in a heartbeat and just build around Irving, Macklemore, and Varejao.
Yeah, you could do that too. That's when coaching says, I don't really like Nerlens Noel, to be honest. I don't like him in the NBA.
I do. I think he's going to be better pro than Anthony Davis. But they have Varejao, who I think is an all-star.
Yeah, they don't. Right.
So they don't need a big.
They don't need a little either.
Well, Macklemore's not a one.
That's true. He would be a two guard.
He can play two or three. Which would help. 6'5". But so yeah.
And he's a freshman. They can groom him.
That'd be interesting. Pair him in the backcourt with Irving. But he's not a guy who demands the ball. He gets spot up and shoot. And we know Irving can get to the basket and kick it out.
But before we start talking on that bandwagon, they have to they got to win the lottery first. So teams have not been winning the lottery when they're supposed to as of late.
Well, they won it with the LeBron year.
I know.
They won it with the Kyrie Irving year. So,
so that means they're due for a loss. No, I'm just kidding.
they are a team who wins the lottery.
All right, NBA playoffs. We've been talking a ton here. Let's get over to it, Josh. Obviously, the East is set. 8 teams already locked in place. Maybe a couple shifts in the middle of the 4 through 6 on what seed they're going to be, but whatever. Western Conference, pretty much 7 teams locked. Not mathematically yet. However, the controversy goes in the 8th spot, with the Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Lakers in contention of the 8th. So
right, the Lakers are currently half a game behind Utah.
Yep.
They have to finish a full game above Utah to make the playoffs because Utah wins the tiebreaker between the two. So Lakers have 5 games left. Utah has 4 games left. Nate, do you think the Lakers will make the playoffs?
I think they have a quality chance. I mean, yeah, being behind stinks. However, this week of games is going to decide it for me. If they could,
it's going to decide it for everybody. There's 1 week of games left. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Then the next 2 days. Then, if I want to narrow it down, that's what I meant. Well, there's a little more than a week technically. It goes a week and a day. Thank you very much.
My mistake. Continue.
But they have the New Orleans Hornets on Tuesday night. Then they have Portland Trail Blazers on Wednesday night at Portland. So that one might be a little bit tougher of a game. However, it should be easily won by a Lakers team. So if
no road game is easily won by a Lakers team this year.
Well, not this year, but come on. The way that they know playoff intention on the line.
Right.
They won at Sacramento, which is a big win. They held their own against Golden State. The bad loss was back to Phoenix. But that's besides the point. I mean, you're right. No, especially this year's team's been a little bit of a fluke. But if they beat the Hornets, the Pelicans now. Jeez.
For the rest of the year, I think they're the Hornets. So okay. We'll say they beat New Orleans.
Okay, so they beat New Orleans and they beat Portland. Now all of a sudden, you look over the Utah Jazz and you expect them to lose to Oklahoma City Thunder.
Right.
It is at home, though, so technically NBA's always flip a coin at this point because who knows. But if they were to win those two,
the Thunder are fighting for the one seed.
Where the Thunder beat the Utah Jazz, now the Lakers are a game up. So now they have Golden State, the Spurs, and the Rockets, who are all 3 playoff teams, which could be tough, especially considering Utah Jazz has Minnesota, Memphis to close out their season. If they can go identical record in the way, so if Utah Jazz slips up and loses 1 to Minnesota, that's going to give confidence to the Lakers. And for me, the Lakers are a team that whenever they're in control of their own destiny, they tend to do pretty well. So if they end up getting those 2 wins on Tuesday night and Wednesday night, have that 1 game lead, thanks in part to the Thunder winning, then I think they'll have a quality chance, and I think the Lakers will kind of put their heads back on and be like, all right, boys, this isn't a fact of, yeah, our year is stunk, but we could sneak into this 8th spot by just winning out the rest of the season. It's just 3 games. So I think it's likely.
I don't think there's any shot to make the playoffs. That was an extremely compelling case from you, and I'm a Laker fan, so I want to believe it, but there's no way. I mean, they're a half game behind Utah right now. They beat New Orleans, they're even. I think that Utah will lose to the Thunder, which puts the Lakers up half a game, but then the Lakers will lose in Portland, which makes it back even. So now it's even with 3 to go. Utah wins both Memphis games, so now they're a game up. Lakers lose. If the Lakers would have to go 3 for 3 in the last 3 and have Utah lose their last game to Memphis?
Well, the two things we kind of mentioned as well with that. Yeah, Memphis is going to be – that's going to be a critical game too, because we're pretty much chalking up Minnesota wins.
Yeah.
If San Antonio clinches the one seed before they play the Lakers, they're going to bench their stars, which can give the Lakers a quality – I mean, they did it earlier with
the, they benched all the only reason the Spurs wouldn't bench their stars are if they want to beat the Lakers so they don't have to see them in the first round. Because I'm guessing, even though the Lakers haven't put it all together this
year,
they're much stronger than Utah in the playoffs. They would give San Antonio a tougher time. I'm not saying the Lakers would beat San Antonio.
Well, the other,
but the star power that the Lakers have, they have a better shot to go deeper in the series and cause San Antonio some trouble.
That's true. On the stat I strategically left out was in the last eight games, the Jazz are 7-1 with the lone loss coming to Denver. But it wasn't anything crazy of a schedule. I don't know. I mean, it's a typical playoff race at the end within any sport if you're looking across the country. I mean, this is prime time. This is who wants it more, I mean, for lack of a cliche. But
well, Kobe wants it more than anybody, so I don't think that's really what it comes down to.
No, I know. Yeah, but the Utah Jazz want it like crazy because they're a team that's not even supposed to be in this situation. All of a sudden, oh, man, we could make the playoffs.
Right.
And we're pretty much in control of our destiny right now.
Oh, they are in control. If they win out, they make the playoffs.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, do they have a shot? Yeah, the Lakers still very much have a shot. Is it as good of a shot as you'd want in years past? No, because Lakers fans are used to being a one or two seed in the West.
That's very frustrating here for us.
Yeah, but it's 1 year. Give it some time. It's never – I mean, players in all sports, whenever they add the superstar, well, I guess with the exception in NBA of Celtics and Heat when they added the big three and the other big three, it just doesn't – it takes time to click.
Well – the first year that the Celtics had Garnett, Allen, and Pierce, they won a title.
Yeah.
The first year that the Heat had Bosh, Wade, and LeBron, they lost in the championship.
Yeah.
The first year, and then they won the title the next year. The first year that the Lakers had Kobe, Powell, and Bynum, they lost in the championship and then won the championship the next year. The Lakers added Dwight and Nash and still have Gasol and Kobe. And I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year, which tells me I don't think they're going to make the championship next year unless something drastic changes.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's all off-season moves, adjustments, whatnot.
I don't even know who I want to coach the Lakers right now. Can we just bring Phil Jackson out of retirement or Wooden out of the grave? And
that'd be great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's end it like we always do in the past with our this day in history.
All right, so I'll give my non-sports ones, and then you give your sports ones. So this day in 1970... Paul McCartney announces the official split of the Beatles. This day in 1963, Winston Churchill becomes the first honorary U.S. citizen. And this day in 1912, the Titanic leaves Queenstown, Ireland for New York. Now, Nick, over to sports.
All right, some sports action. This day, April 9th in 1912, was the first exhibition baseball game held at Fenway Park. It was between Boston and Harvard.
Oh.
University. So interesting there. Also, fast forward a couple of years. In 1941, the PGA established the Golf Hall of Fame. And then 18 years later, in 1959, the Boston Celtics won their eighth consecutive NBA championship. Will they do it again this month? Yeah, they're going to be around the seventh seed, so we'll see. And then also a little hockey shout-out as well. Wayne Gretzky passed Jean Beliveau as the all-time hockey playoff leading scorer back in 1987, a couple years before I was born, as Gretzky was obviously one of the hockey greats. So
the great one.
That'll do it in sports.
All right. Thanks, Nick. And that'll do it for Full Court Press. Alongside Nick Merrick, I'm Josh Franz. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening, and a full playoff preview next week.